Knowing the Truth with Pastor Kevin Bowling is a live call-in radio program providing doctrinal dialogue, cultural commentary, and insightful interviews with some of today's foremost Christian authors and leaders. Knowing the Truth is the outreach ministry of the Mountain Bridge Bible Fellowship, located on Highway 25 in Travelers Rest. The goal of the church and the radio program is to seek the glory of God in the salvation of sinners and the sanctification of the saints by the ministry of the Word. For more information, go to www.knowingthetruth.org. Here with today's edition of Knowing the Truth is Pastor Kevin Bowling.
Hey, welcome into this edition of the Knowing the Truth radio broadcast. This is Pastor Kevin Bowling. So glad that you joined us today. By the way, if you're looking out on the web on sermon audio for the video version of the Knowing the Truth radio broadcast, the webcast that we do on a daily basis, you won't see it there today. Jim's out of the studio today, and Jim has been doing that for us, and he's had to take a little bit of an unexpected trip, has a family member who is not doing well, and so he's out of the studio today, so we won't be doing a live video cast of the radio program today. The good side of that means that I can come in my pajamas and do the program. Gary's shaking his head at that one. He's like, no, we can't have that going on. So, I'm not in the pajamas. But we have a lot of things to talk about on the radio program today. The news, of course, is just, there's so many different items that are in the news. Right now, the countdown is taking place in Egypt. I think they said, if I understood the newscast correctly, they were saying that the largest protest in human history is taking place right now in Egypt as the military has joined with the protesters in order to give the president there, Morsi, an ultimatum. And the ultimatum ends. The time is up, I think, as we speak there in Egypt. And so who knows what now is going to take place. All I can say is when I see all these protests constantly taking place in the Middle East, a couple of things come to my mind. One is, what do these people do for a living? All they do is protest constantly over there, taking place once again. Secondly, my second thing that pops up in my mind is what an abysmal failure the Obama foreign policy has been concerning Egypt or the Middle East in general. Didn't they just support this guy not that long ago during the Arab Spring? We said that the last guy, Mubarak, was the bad guy, and so we were going to go ahead and support the protesters then, and we'll put somebody else in there. Well, now Obama, we propped up this guy and put him in, and now he's the bad guy. So a little bit of a difficult situation, right, about who do you support now? And here's the third thought. Didn't we give these guys F-15s or something just not that many months ago that we decided that we were going to go ahead and send them, you know, this military equipment? Well, now we've got the military going against the guy that we propped up. It's just a mess. I think the whole thing is just a train wreck over there. And so, the Obama foreign policy is just a joke at this point. He doesn't seem to know which way is up on any of the things that are taking place. But he got his vacation in over there to Africa, so that's all that's important, I guess, $100 million worth of it. I have my wife is currently with my daughter at an Air Force base in Spokane, Washington. And so my daughter's about to give birth, and so she's there with her because my son-in-law is deployed. And here's the thing. I said, so they're having celebrations tomorrow on the 4th of July at the Air Force Base. She said, no, they've been canceled because of the sequester. So here's on the military base. They're not going to celebrate the 4th of July, and yet the president's out spending $100 million and then telling people in Africa, hey, we're going to bring you over to the United States. And by the way, we're going to give you $9 billion to help electricity rates over here in Africa. I mean, this is just getting bizarre. I think maybe we need to protest. What do you think? Maybe it's time for us to take to the streets and head down to Washington, maybe, and say, you know, it's time for a change here. You know, if they think there's time for a change there, hey, look at what's going on in this country. There's my rant to start the program before celebrating the 4th of July. Let's, since that isn't enough for us to go on, let's go ahead and look at some of the news items. We're joined here by Emily Bells. Emily has been very busy writing about a number of things that were taking place. I spoke yesterday on the broadcast about an article that Marvin Olasky had written about what was said by Justice Scalia as to why the liberal judges on the court decided to vote against DOMA. And I said yesterday during the broadcast that these types of statements that were made, that Scalia says they had determined that anyone who was standing against DOMA was an enemy of the human race. Those are strong words. And Justice Scalia, was basically saying that remember that phrase because this is going to come back to haunt us. Well, Emily Bells from World Magazine is writing about this. She's got an article that's called DOMA's Rulings Ripple Effect. And she's actually documenting now what is taking place as a result of what the justices said in the majority opinion. Emily, welcome to the Knowing the Truth radio broadcast.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Emily, I'm so glad that you're doing this because I think people thought it was, you know, just an empty threat, an empty warning that this was going to have a ripple effect the way that it was done. But bring our listeners up to speed as to exactly what's taking place in Michigan now, just a couple days removed from this ruling about DOMA coming down from the United States Supreme Court.
Right. So two different judges in Michigan have already used the DOMA ruling to challenge Michigan's laws regarding marriage. So Michigan has a constitutional amendment that defines marriage as between a man and a woman. And a judge recently allowed a lawsuit against that amendment to go forward based on the DOMA ruling. And then another judge also allowed, issued an injunction against the state law that only allows public benefits for married couples. And so that would be, you know, just couples that are male and female and married. So already they've blocked that law based on the ruling from the Supreme Court last week.
And the key element here, the idea of judicial activism and, you know, these judges trying to strike these things down, that's nothing new. They've been doing this for a long period of time. But what is new in these cases is a statement that you make here that you attribute, I think, to Judge David Lawson, one of these judges that struck this or is trying to strike this down. He says this: the court finds that the plaintiffs have stated a plausible claim that the law violates the Equal Protection Clause, Judge David Lawson wrote in granting preliminary injunction against the law. He described how Kennedy struck down DOMA because it was motivated by animosity towards homosexuals, and said the Michigan Public Benefits Law did the same. He goes on to say that the historical background and legislative history of the act demonstrates that it was motivated by animus against gay men and lesbians, Lawson wrote. He said the Sixth U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals, the circuit that includes his court, doesn't yet give gay and lesbians equal protection status, but it should, based on the DOMA ruling. Now, those words there are extremely disturbing. Again, as I pointed out yesterday, looking at the motive of the folks who stood against DOMA or for DOMA and saying that even though it's listed as the Defense of Marriage Act, what they're basically saying that it was not a defensive position against something, It was an attack position against something else, and what it was attacking was, it was attacking individuals that were homosexual. Is that a correct way to look at this?
Yeah, that's right. I think the most significant part of Justice Kennedy's ruling on DOMA was his equal protection analysis that he gave to homosexuals. So he tried to be kind of cute about it and say that, you know, equal protection only applied in states where there were gay marriage laws. But these judges obviously aren't really seeing that distinction. They're just saying all gay people have equal protection rights as a result of the Supreme Court ruling. Mm. So I think we'll see that in more cases down the road.
Well, I had made the point yesterday that both the DOMA case and the Prop 8 case, the rulings that came down from the United States Supreme Court, that they were not a death knell to marriage the way that they were being promoted as being, you know, in many of the headlines and so forth. That if you looked carefully at what the rulings were about, you know, the one in Prop 8 was just saying that they didn't have standing to bring it, and so it was sent back, you know, to California. And the other one with DOMA was on one aspect of DOMA that was spoken of there, and it was supposed to be only then for the states that had actually allowed for gay marriage to take place in their states. And so I was saying that let's just go ahead and, you know, see these as they really are. But maybe my analysis is actually wrong, or at least it's wrong in the eyes of these judges. They seem to be saying that that ruling was much broader than what, you know, I interpreted just from looking at what was stated during the majority and then the dissenting positions.
Yeah, well, I guess I wouldn't say the sky is falling just yet, because I think this is going to look differently in all parts of the country. You know, one lawyer I talked to yesterday was saying that that Kennedy's opinion is going to be used like a wrecking ball by people who want to see gay marriage legalized. So for certain judges, they won't read it as broadly, but judges like these two in Michigan that we saw yesterday will read that DOMA opinion much more broadly and use it to strike down traditional marriage laws. So I think it'll look differently in different places.
Well, it sounds like that it's only going to open up a can of worms on additional lawsuits and additional court decisions, because obviously two people looking at that ruling can come up with significantly different interpretations of exactly what was done. I think the actual ruling was very narrow and wasn't supposed to be, or at least legally, from a legal standpoint, did not have the broad interpretation that they're forcing it to have. For them to rule about a person's opinion or a person's motive for doing something, I think is outside the scope of the jurisdiction of the Supreme Court. And for them to try to build motive into the ruling, I think is something that needs to be addressed. And for them, you know, to just clarify this, that they don't have the ability to judge the motive of someone. So somehow we've got to put this to an end, and I hope that there's a way that we can do that, because I don't think it's right. You know, the real irony of this, and you bring this out in your article, and so it'd be great for you to expound upon it a little bit, but Justice Kennedy was historically the one who was for states' rights. And so here he is, you know, kind of tosses this back to the state as an advocate of states' rights, something I agree with. And yet his ruling, because of the way that he spoke about it, especially in the majority opinion, his ruling is actually being used to undermine state rights.
Yeah, I think he found himself in a difficult position in terms of the two things that he wants to be remembered for. So he wants to be remembered as defending states' rights, but he also wants to be remembered as a defender of gay rights, and so he has written now all three of the Supreme Court's rulings on gay rights. So it's obvious that he wants that to be part of his legacy. And I think that, you know, he tried to thread the needle between those two, between states' rights and gay rights, and it's obvious that at least some judges aren't going to see the protections for states' rights that he tried to put in that ruling.
Mm-hmm. It seems like the folks like at the Alliance Defending Freedom, I think that's their new name, right, Alliance Defense Freedom or something, that they are going to be very busy over the next couple of years, because this has just once again opened up a can of worms on something that really we have no business even tying up the courts with this type of conversations. And the reason I say that is that in their ruling they talk about precedents. And that now, because of what the judge said, Kennedy said in the U.S. Supreme Court, that he has set a precedence that now needs to be considered in the state rulings. The only problem is that the precedence for marriage was overwhelming. It has been the opinion of civil society from the beginning of time, and not just in the United States, but universally across the globe, and certainly from the beginning of the United States up until just the last 5 or 10 years, it has been unquestionably the standard of one man and one woman. This is what the definition of marriage is. So I don't know of any other case that you could possibly have greater amount of precedence. And this is what the court is supposed to be looking at, at least one element of it, one very important element. And yet they seem to just, with the wave of a hand, you know, just dismiss all of that precedence and just say, well, you know what, the times have changed, and therefore we're going to go ahead and just redefine marriage. And it really, I think, has really destroyed in many people's minds the objectivity of the court. You know, supposed to be blind to these things, and they really have hurt their own standing. Nobody takes them seriously anymore. They just see them as another political element. Would you agree? Do you think the court is has really hurt themselves and their standing before the American people?
Yeah, well, you know, that was Justice Scalia's point exactly in the dissent that he wrote, that the court was usurping the power of the people to determine their own laws. And he was just saying, you know, if public opinion on this issue has changed, we should let the people change their laws. We shouldn't be doing it for them. So I think, and his dissent is just blistering through the whole thing. So it's obvious that he felt really passionately the same sentiment that you were expressing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was quite unprecedented for him to make those statements. The liberals have basically dismissed it as just an angry rant from a sore loser or something like that. But it was much more telling than that. I think that we've turned a corner here. When you don't have any recourse, you can't go to the top court now in the country without the political element influencing their decision there. When that happens, people feel frustrated that there is no court of appeal that is unbiased. And when that starts taking place in the country, I think, you know, I was saying in the beginning here about the protests that are taking place in Egypt. Well, they reach a tipping point where they feel that everything is so corrupt and that there's nothing you can do about it. And, you know, I think that in some ways we may look back on this decision with the Supreme Court and say that this was one of those tipping points where people just realized, you know what, there is no objective recourse that you can have in this country, that even the Supreme Court is corrupt in their opinion, and will not look at things objectively. And I think that that is extremely problematic. It's certainly going to be problematic for those that support marriage. We're going to see that right away. But I think it's going to have a broader sense than that. I just think people are really getting frustrated by what's taking place. Do you sense that as well?
Yeah, I mean, I think people have expressed that frustration with the Supreme Court for decades, but on this issue, it does seem like people are much more tuned into what the court is doing.
Yeah, especially I hope people are reading Justice Scalia's dissent because, you know, this isn't just some guy on the radio making a rant, you know, and talking about these things. This isn't just, you know, some guy at the office cooler who is saying these things. You know, this is a fellow Supreme Court justice saying they basically now are going to do whatever they feel they can get away with. That is, that's chilling to hear those types of words coming out. And we know that a couple of the other Supreme Court justices, who knows, you know, they may not be able to make it throughout this term, and it could even be more imbalanced than what it is now. And so we've got a real issue facing the nation, I think, in this particular case that came down. And I'm not just talking about, you know, whether they came to a different opinion about DOMA and about Prop 8. Prop 8 was disturbing as well, too, from the standpoint that the elected officials in California decided that they just wouldn't defend it. That was the same thing that we saw with President Obama, where both he and Eric Holder said they wouldn't defend marriage, even though it was passed by the Congress. Again, that is chilling when we just have elected officials that are saying, even though these things are duly passed, and this is part of our system, that once it's passed, you have an obligation to, from the oath that you took to uphold these things, for them just to say then, well, yeah, but we don't agree with it, so we're not going to abide by it. That, now we're talking about lawlessness, you know, where you just won't uphold the laws that you've been sworn to uphold. That is another level in this altogether. And so there's many pieces of this. And I wanted to ask you really quickly, though, Emily, before we close out the interview for today. You also wrote just today, I think it came out or was posted on World Magazine webpage, www.worldmag.com. You wrote about that there is no delay for enforcement of contraceptive mandate. This is the other big issue that is taking place, the implementation of Obamacare. I say, hey, since they don't enforce and and carry through on the things that are passed, let's not do it either. But anyways, you wrote about this and said that a big ruling came out, not a ruling, but a statement from the administration yesterday saying that they are not going to enforce the employer mandate, but that doesn't mean that they're not going to enforce the contraceptive mandate. Spell that out in layman's terms for our listening audience.
Yeah, it's really complicated, but the fines are different for the contraceptive mandate and for the employer mandate. So essentially, an employer can offer, can decide not to offer insurance, and he won't face any fines because of this delay. But if an employer does offer insurance, they're going to get fined if they don't have contraceptives as part of that insurance coverage. So it's a little tricky to understand, but essentially, the contraceptive mandate is going to be enforced starting in January.
And, of course, numerous groups have come out, Christian groups have come out and banded together and said that they will not offer that insurance, that they want a waiver from the government on religious grounds. And one positive note on that storyline is that Hobby Lobby received an injunction from a federal judge that the fines that they would incur for not doing that, that those there had been a stay, right, on those fines so that they weren't going to incur those fines while the decision was being made. Is that correct?
That's right, yeah. The contraceptive mandate is already in force for for-profit companies. So Hobby Lobby was facing somewhere around $475 million in fines a year for not providing contraceptives. But with this court order, they're good to go until the next court decision.
Mm-hmm. Now, with the employers, one of the things that was taking place is the employers were starting to get very creative about how they were going to get around the mandate, because the mandate was only for 50 full-time employees or more. So the 51st one, I guess, then you would have to start offering insurance to everybody in your company. And so they were starting to put a lot of people on part-time and trying to keep them from full-time status in order to hide this. So it was going to have and starting to have a dramatic impact on the economy again, certainly in people's lives. Other people say, too, I saw yesterday that one person said that this is an attempt by the Obama administration to kind of take all of the negativity about that point off the table before the midterm elections that are coming up. And so that the Democrats were facing just a tremendous onslaught of negativity as a result of this, as the realities of Obamacare were hitting home, and that this is his attempt to try to, again, hold this off until after another election, and then, you know, then it's going to hit people full force, and then it's going to be, you know, then people will really start feeling the pain. Do you feel that was an element of this as well?
Yeah, it seems pretty obvious, I guess, that it starts 2 months after the elections. But I guess you haven't heard very many Democrats protesting the decision to delay the employer mandate. So You can tell that it's not exactly something they're too upset about.
Yeah, exactly. They'd love to have that one off the plate. They've got enough things to be out there trying to apologize for and get around. So hopefully there's going to be a change, you know, a big change that's going to take place. We've got to do something about these major issues that, of course, are going to have major ramifications on our country. Emily, thank you so much for joining us today on the program. We really appreciate it, the work that you do. You know, being right there for a lot of these cases, many times right in the court room itself when these things are coming down. We appreciate that firsthand account of what's taking place, and we appreciate the, on a greater level, too, the work of all the folks there at World Magazine. It really helps us out tremendously.
All right. Thanks for having me.
Okay. Again, World Mag is www.worldmag.com. That's www.worldmag.com. You can go out there and read Emily's articles, and you can also read some of the other articles that are written out there. I would recommend to you read that one by Marvin Olasky that I was alluding to yesterday on the program, where he goes through and talks about Judge Antonin Scalia's dissent. That article was called What the Supreme Court Decision Means. That would be a really good one to familiarize yourself with.
You're listening to Knowing the Truth with Pastor Kevin Bowling. For more information about today's program, the radio ministry, and the resources we offer, go to www.knowingthetruth.org.